All right.
Is anyone going to do an introduction of me? Or no, I just start myself. That's embarrassing. Okay. So, you want to introduce? No, that's all right. I can introduce myself because I'm prouder. And I know what good things to say about myself. So, one thing is, if we can, yeah, I guess everybody's seated is how they could sit, but it would be better if we could sit in a circle around me. If there's any way to change with so many people in the room, I guess not. Maybe not. Okay. So, welcome to the seminar on empathic communication. And before we start the seminar on empathic communication, we're going to chant a little bit. And we're going to chant in a little bit different way than you're accustomed to chanting. And I'm not talking about chanting demigod songs or anything like that. That's not the point. We're going to chant Jairana Madhava, but we're going to chant it differently. Not a different tune, but we're going to chant it in a way, hopefully, we can be connected to the meaning of Jairana Madhava. Because the whole point of empathic communication is to be connected, first of all, with Krishna. Who's Krishna? Does anyone know? Nobody knows. Okay. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has his girlfriend up there. So to be connected with Krishna and his girlfriend, Srimati Radharani, and to be connected with each other. So oftentimes, or most of the time maybe, we're pretty much disconnected because we do things in Krishna consciousness and in our relationships, interactions with each other that are more ritualistic. Ritualistic is something that's described by Srila Rupa Goswami as Niyam Agraha. Niyam Agraha means to do things without being conscious of what you're doing, right? He says in the Upadeshamrita, Achahara Prayasa Chapajapa Niyam Agraha Janasanga Shaloyam Cha. I'm not going to translate the whole thing, but he says, one of the things that interferes with our Krishna consciousness is doing things and not being connected. So we're here, we're going to talk about relationships. And then maybe at the end of the seminar, we'll talk about connected to Krishna. But right now, we're going to give you a demonstration as we chant Jai Radha Madhava. Because how often do we think of the meaning of Jai Radha Madhava while we're chanting it? How often do we think of the meaning of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra while we're chanting it? How often do we think Jai Radha Madhava, Radharani, Krishna, and what are they doing? Does anyone know? Kunja Bihari? What does Kunja Bihari mean? Huh? Yeah, enjoying in the groves of Vrindavan. Can you all picture that in your minds? Krishna and Radharani, of course, it's a little elevated. We don't want to become sahajas here. So it's a little elevated. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Just picture that. Make a mental picture, imagination, visualize, whatever you're good at. And then, Gopi Janabalava Giribadadhari. What does that mean? Yeah, Gopi Jan, he's dear to the gopis, and what does he do with the left hand, the pinky of his left hand? He lifts what? Mount Everest? Govardhan Hill. With the pinky of his left hand. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. So he's the dearmost of Yashoda Mai and all the Braja Vasis. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. He's enjoying by the banks of the Yamuna. So what we're going to do when we chant Jai Radha Madhava, this is a little exercise, is we're going to stop after each verse. I'm going to chant. You're going to respond. You don't have to if you don't want. And then we're going to talk about or ask you to meditate upon that meaning. to show you what connection is. And actually, if we connect like that throughout our Krishna consciousness, we will always be experiencing ecstasy. Sometimes devotees ask me, why is it after 10 years in the Hare Krishna movement, the ecstasy just went away? When I first joined, it was great. I love Sankirtan, I love Prasadam, I love Bhagavatam class, but now it's just boring. I'm not asking for any of you to tell me if you actually feel that way. But many people do experience that. And the reason is because we're not thinking of what we're doing while we're doing it, we're disconnected. Okay, let's chant. And I'll just use my hands instead of cartels. And you respond if you like. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Okay, stop. So just think of Radharani and Krishna enjoying in the groves of Vrindavan. Let's try that again, just first again. Just think about it, meditate, visualize. Close your eyes if you want. That's okay. I won't think you're sleeping. I can tell if you're sleeping. So try it again. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Okay. How many people could visualize, imagine, or at least think about what was happening? Very good. And anyone want to volunteer how you felt when you chanted Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari? Did you feel joyful, happy, sad, depressed, angry at me? Anyone want to raise your hand? Yeah. What's that? Joyful. Very nice. Being part of that. Very nice. Very good. Connection. That's the word. Any men? Any bold men here? Yeah. That's right. And oftentimes we do experience our mind wandering here and there while we're chanting, while we're listening to the chanting, while we're going to Bhagavatam class. As they say, the Bhagavatam class is the best remedy if one has problems falling asleep. Because, you know, the reason you can't sleep at night, you have some problem, is because there's so many inauspicious things in the heart. And by regular attendance in Bhagavatam class, all the inauspicious things in the heart disappear, and you can take rest. So therefore, better to be connected. Okay, so, and we'll just finish the chanting because we have a seminar to get to. And we'll do the other verse and try to think of the meaning of the other verses. Gopi jana balaba giri badhari. Gopi jana balaba giri badhari. Gopi jana balaba giri badhari.
Gopi jana balaba
Yasunanandana Rajajana Ranjana. Yasodanandana Prajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Te Rabana Chakti. Yamuna Te Rabana Chakti. Jai Radho Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radho Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Padamahansa Paravidakacharya Ostutera Satashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananda Gauti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Param se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidvaita Gadadha Shivasiri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gajai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopikopata Sayam Kunrada Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavadam Kijai Maturadam Kijai Jagadatha Sami Kijai Yamadamai Kijai Shrimati Lasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindigajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Gauranga Ki Jai. Okay. So with that brief introduction, I'd like to read some quotes from Srila Prabhupada, if I may. About compassion, because empathic communication involves compassion for others, compassion for yourself, and being vulnerable and open enough to reveal to yourself and to others your feelings and needs. So here's some quotes from Srila Prabhupada. Let's start with the Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, text 28. Arjuna said, my dear friends, seeing my friends, Krishna is his friend, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my body drying up. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, although it is not mentioned here, still one can easily imagine that not only were Arjuna's bodily limbs quivering and his mouth drying up, but he was also crying out of compassion. Such symptoms in Arjuna were not due to weakness, but to his soft-heartedness, a characteristic of a pure devotee of the Lord. And next Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, text 1, but no one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nations cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress. The gross material body. And finally, the intro from the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Advaita Acharya saw that the total human society was full of materialistic activities and devoid of devotional service, which alone could save mankind from the threefold miseries of material existence, he, out of his causeless compassion for the age-worn human society, prayed fervently for an incarnation of the Lord and continually worshiped the Lord with water of the Ganges and leaves of the holy Tulsi tree. As far as preaching work in the Sankirtan movement was concerned, everyone was expected to do his daily share according to the order of the Lord. And just finally, Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 21, text 31, a quote from Prabhupada, showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. So, to do a brief introduction to who I am, my name is Virkrishna Goswami, and the reason I'm teaching empathic communication is as follows, that I've spent 200 years in the Hare Krishna movement. I know I don't look it, but anyway, so I spent a long time in the Hare Krishna movement. And what I've noticed in the Hare Krishna movement and in all religious societies, that there's a tendency towards ritualism both in relationships and, which we mentioned before, and in the performance of devotional service. And I've noticed sometimes that we have these conflicts. Now, conflicts aren't bad, but we have sometimes conflicts that are not resolved. Anybody who's wants proof of this, go on the internet. No one's heard of Facebook here, but anyway, go on the internet and you'll see all these conflicts, and you'll see conflicts in society in general. And as a result of that, I wanted to find out why we are experiencing conflicts, because we're supposed to chant Hare Krishna and be happy and loving. In fact, the whole purpose of this seminar is to have fun, so we can be loving, compassionate, and everything like that. And if you don't have fun, I'll kill you. Anyway, so the whole purpose, I mean, the reason I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement was to be happy. Prabhupada said the business of the temple president is to make sure everyone's eating enough prasadam and is jolly. That's the temple president's first two duties. And the mission statement for ISKCON is more devotees, happier devotees. So these are very important points. So I noticed in many cases this wasn't happening. What is the reason? The problem is not in the process of Krishna consciousness or the activities of Krishna consciousness, but it goes deeper. So I wanted to see how to help devotees develop compassionate relationships. In order to do that, I study the works of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, particularly the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about our basic needs. We all have basic needs, and he says until someone is satisfied on the basic need platform, and I'm going to explain what I mean by that, then you can't really advance in devotional service. Basic needs, okay. Needs means not what I want. For example, the other day I was walking down the street and I saw a Lexus. And I thought, I need a Lexus. Or anyway, something fancier. Or a Mercedes or something like that. That's not a need. By needs, we are talking about things that we all need. Like, for example, and there's a chart up in the back there, and you can look at it later, food, air, water. Does anyone here not need food, air, water? Raise your hand. Then you're a yogi. You don't belong in this seminar. So we all have those basic physical needs. And when you're hungry, it's hard to chant Hare Krishna, because your stomach is chanting instead of your mouth. Right? You're just thinking, oh, what am I going to eat? Or if you're in anxiety, so there's other needs we have too in addition. We have needs, interpersonal needs. We have a need for fun. Is that a bad word? No, we should have fun. I'm having fun now. I'm not doing this because I didn't come here because I have to, because Roma Padmaraj pressured me into coming here, because Brajalila pressured me into coming here. Maybe they did. Anyway, so I'm doing this because it's fun. I like doing this. I'm doing everything in my life right now because it's fun. I don't do anything because I have to do it. If you're doing anything because you have to do it, you're in trouble. If you're not having fun, you're in trouble. You're going to get sick. So we have a need for fun. We have a need for recreation. We have a need for play. We have a need for interpersonal relationships. And here's a big one. If there's any brahmacharis in the room, don't listen. We have a need for love. No brahmacharis. Okay, that's good. We have a need for autonomy, making our own decisions in life. I'm just like, let me give an example of a child expressing autonomy. Usually when the children are growing up and they hit 2 years of age, that stage is called what? Terrible twos? Isn't that true? But it's not terrible, it's a wonderful twos. Because the child is expressing its need to make its, you know, his or her, need to make their own decisions in life. That's wonderful. So we have our own a need for independence, interdependence. We're not talking about independence from Krishna. However, Krishna allows us to make independent choices. What did he say to Arjuna after he explained everything in the Gita? Did he say to Arjuna, now you have to do what I say or else you're going to hell? Anybody know that verse? Do what I say or I'm going to kill you. Do what I say. Here's a guilt trip. How can you do this to me, Arjuna? I've been your friend for so many years. You're giving me so much pain, Arjuna. You're going to kill me, Arjuna. No, he said, now that you've heard it, do what you want. That's called free will. So we have a need to make our own decisions in life, all these things, all the way up to the top, which is Krishna consciousness. We have a need to connect to Krishna. We have a need to connect with each other. We have a need for loving exchanges. All these different needs are there. We're going to be learning about them in this course. So in my studies, I came across these basic needs. I mean, I didn't know that I had any needs before. When I was a young devotee, very young, I was traveling with a sannyasi. In those days, sannyasis were pretty mean. Nowadays, as we've gotten older, you know, they're kinder, gentler, peace, love. It's different. I mean, none of you have experienced Krishna consciousness in the early days. All right, so I was traveling with a sannyasi who shall be nameless to protect the innocent. He's my friend still. So no one you all know, maybe. So I was a brahmachari, and I was his assistant. And I would tell him, you know, I need to sleep. No, you're not the body. You know, because he would keep me working all day long. And the only time I had to chant my rounds was after he went to sleep at night, because he needed to sleep and I didn't need to sleep. It was from 10 to 12 midnight. So, you know, I was told, you have no needs. You don't need to sleep. You don't need to eat. You just need to listen to me. That was my only need in Krishna consciousness. Fortunately, now he's my good friend. And he's definitely experiencing the fulfillment of his needs. Anyway, so, and I am too. So I investigated this whole need thing that we all need needs. And after reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works, I started studying a little psychology. And one of the psychologists I studied was named Maslow. Anyone's heard of Maslow before? Yeah, Maslow, famous guy. And he talks about the psychology of needs too. In fact, the need triangle you have in back of Brajalila over there is actually based upon his teachings and also the teachings of another person named Marshall Rosenberg. So after all this investigation, I came across the teachings of nonviolent communication, which were taught by someone named Marshall Rosenberg. And it's pretty much struck a chord with me. In other words, it resonated with me, and I decided to go further and study with him and attend some what we call intensives. That means 10-day-long studies, workshops, trainings in nonviolent communication. Now, I also decided to adapt nonviolent communication to Krishna consciousness, because there's some aspects of nonviolent communication that are not applicable to Krishna consciousness, but they're applicable to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings. So in order to do that, I started doing seminars around the world in nonviolent and empathic communication, which is how I branded nonviolent communication for Krishna consciousness. So that's my background. And let's see, what's the next point? We want to have fun. Okay, so here we're talking about compassion. Compassion and empathy. We're going to describe what empathy is and what empathy is not. And also we're going to mention that empathy and compassion are a natural part of our being. In fact, animals have natural compassion and empathy. And I'm going to give you a practical example of that. That recently, there was a video on the internet about a whale. And there was a lady who was diving, skin diving, scuba diving at the same time. And this whale kept pushing her away. And a whale actually put the lady under the whale's fin and was holding the lady there. The lady was completely, as we say, freaked out and anxiety, thinking this whale is going to kill me. And later on, she discovered that the whale was protecting her from a shark. So here's a whale, which is definitely not a human being, but a whale has a spirit soul. The spirit soul of the whale is also inclined towards compassion and empathy, protecting a human being. Amazing. So empathy and compassion is not a management tool or a way to learn how to deal with your children so they will obey you. Don't worry. It's a way to connect to people. To connect. And so there's a difference between empathy and sympathy. These two words are generally utilized synonymously. Empathy is basically about the other person, and sympathy is about you. For example, let me give a practical example. Let's say there's a devotee. Let's say you're sick. You have a toothache, okay? Make believe you have a toothache. You have nice teeth. So let's say you're sick, you have a toothache, and I'm your friend. So sympathy would be something like, I feel so bad that you're feeling that pain. How do you feel if I say that? You feel good? All right. That's good. That's sympathy. But it's about me. And if I say to you, you're experiencing pain. It must be really difficult to chant your rounds and eat prasadam and everything like that. That's more of a connection. Because I'm connecting with that particular individual's feelings and needs. So that's really what empathy is. It's not, for example, sometimes professional psychologists, professional therapists, they'll give sympathy and it doesn't help the patient. They'll just say, I feel so bad for you. Or they will say something like giving advice. Do this, do that. So that is not empathy, that is actually sympathy. So it changes consciousness in a way that we can resolve conflicts very easily and connect with each other. That's the power of empathy. And it gives you power with people rather than over people. Because generally we try to exert our power over people to control people, but it allows us to be with people and connect with people. So one benefit of learning this system of empathic communication is that you won't have to do a lot of the things you're doing now. It's like freedom. You won't have to chant your japa. Isn't that good? You won't have to cook for the children anymore. You won't have to listen to your parents anymore. Isn't that exciting? Wow. Liberation. No more japa. No more rising early. No. We still chant our japa. We still listen to our parents. That's a disappointment. We still cook for our children, but it's with a different energy. When we approach life with a have-to mentality, then we are disconnected from the particular activity and the particular meaning and the particular person we're doing that activity for. Like if I think, let's say, if I have to cook for someone, have to cook, and I just keep that mentality in my mind, I have to cook. I have to cook for you. It's just, it evokes in me a need for autonomy. And because it evokes in me a need for autonomy, I become rebellious. I become angry. Why do I have to do this? Same thing with chanting japa. If you have in your consciousness that I have to chant 16 rounds, then, as Srila Prabhupada explained one day when he was being a little humorous, he was chanting on his beads and he was moving his counter beads down, and when he moved the last one down, he said, oh, now I finished my rounds, I can do any damn thing. That will be your consciousness. Let me just get them done. When am I going to get my rounds done? So I can get onto my real life, like my mobile phone and my whatever else I have in life. Or watching TV or whatever, whatever else you do. No, you rephrase what you're doing. Instead of I have to, you rephrase it to I choose to. To fulfill a basic need. We're going to go greater in depth into this in the next day or two. For example, I don't have to chant my japa. I'm choosing to chant my japa. Well, I'm going to ask all of you. Who has an idea why I should choose to chant my japa? Connect with Krishna. Any other ideas? Yeah. Yeah, I'll be happy. Yes. That's another have to. It's my duty. When I hear the word duty, it makes me scared. I don't. Yes, we have to, we have a duty, but if we're simply doing things because of duty, that disconnects us from the activity. If you're chanting your japa, it's my duty to chant my japa. It's my duty to go to work. It's my duty to whatever else you're doing. Take my kids to school. Oh, every day. Do you drive your kids to school? Doesn't it get dry after a while? Yeah. Driving the little brats to school every day. So any other reasons for chanting our japa? Yeah. Yeah, commitment. I want to be committed to Krishna, my spiritual master. That's good. That's an important need. Yes. Yeah, to realize my original nature as servant of Krishna. Yeah. Our consciousness so we can Purify our consciousness. I want to purify my consciousness so I can see my spiritual nature. Yes. To love and be loved. Yeah. Yes. Yes, when you rephrase like that, you're happy. Any other? Anyone else? Yes. Why? But why do you choose? Krishna. Make a connection with Krishna. Yeah. Clean your heart. You want to have a clean heart. Good. Yes. Become a servant of the servant. Okay. Louder? It's fun. It's because you're having fun. Yeah. You enjoy it. You're having fun. That's nice. You want to serve. Good. Why do you want to control your mind? What's that? Overcome difficulties. Good. Yep. Yes. See your soul. That's very good. So what we're seeing here is there's all sorts of different reasons, and it's individual. Before you chant japa in the morning, you can actually do a sankalpa. A sankalpa means what's the intention. Like every time you do a Vedic sacrifice, there's always a sankalpa, where you say we're here on this day of the moon, this day of the month, and we're doing what, a marriage, or we're doing an initiation or something. It's called the sankalpa. So before you chant japa in the morning, you can say, I'm choosing to chant japa because I want to blank, blank, blank. You know, I have all sorts of different reasons every day for choosing to chant japa. One day it's, I want to be more compassionate. Another day is, I'm chanting japa because I want Krishna to save this disciple who's a nonsense. So every day there's a different reason. So that's very important. Whatever you do, try not to do it with a feeling of have to. Try to do it with a feeling of I'm choosing to, and you'll find life much more pleasant. When you're taking your kids to school, when you're talking to your wife, when you're cooking for my kids, your kids, not my kids, when you're cooking for, I got over 1,000, so it's not a problem. So when you're cooking for your kids, just think, I'm choosing to cook for my kids because I want them to grow up and be Krishna conscious. I'm bringing them to the temple because I want them to be Krishna conscious. That's important. And that's one of the first steps in empathic communication. So, but why are we seeing people, is another question I had in my mind before, seeing people not being compassionate in spite of being in a religious society? And this is a problem not only that we have within ISKCON, but every religious society has the same problem. That people are not acting compassionately in spite of having a compassionate, perfect philosophy. I mean, sometimes I've been told that you people in ISKCON, you know, referring in general, it's not that everybody's like that, have the most personal philosophy. But why do you act so impersonally? You ever heard that before? A very personal philosophy. God's a person. Then why are you just calling other devotees? You nonsense. You're in Maya. You're a dog. You're a less intelligent woman. In fact, we're going to do a little exercise right now. In a second. This was analyzed by someone named Joseph Campbell. He's the same one who came up with the theory behind Star Wars, in case you're interested. So he analyzed people in religious societies in general. This is before ISKCON existed, so don't worry. It's not us. And he found out that 80% of the people in religious societies were less compassionate than the people in general. Oh my God. That's God. So, 80% of people and 20% of the people in religious societies were more compassionate than others. That's interesting, isn't it? Than the general populace. We're talking about general populace. Somehow or other they had a compassionate meter. They stuck a compassionate meter on your wrist to see how compassionate you were. No, they had a standardized test. So we're going to discuss why that is. And we're going to do a little exercise that should be interesting. That one of the main reasons why people in religious societies are less compassionate in general, and we've experienced the same dynamic, is something called moralistic judgments. That in religious societies, we have a lot of names that are derogatory and also positive names, which are moralistic judgments which disconnect us from people. Like if I say, sorry if I use you again. If I say, you are a nonsense, then it disconnects me from him because he is not a nonsense. Maybe you are, but anyway. you're not, sorry about that. I'm just being rhetorical here. So, because no one is a nonsense. No one is a demon. That may come as a surprise. Even my friend Robin is not. So, no one is a nonsense. No one is a demon. It just happens to be at that particular point, they maybe made a mistake. But every one of us is a dynamic entity. Sometimes we do things well. Sometimes we don't do things well. Sometimes we do things right. Sometimes we make a mistake. But we are not a mistake, and we are not a right thing either. That we're dynamic. Dynamic means it's always changing. Like they say, you can't step into the same river twice. Why? Because the river's always running, right? It's not the same river. So we're not the same person now that we were yesterday. Or this moment, moment to moment. Sometimes we're connected to Krishna. Sometimes I'm absorbed in the holy names. And sometimes, you know, I'm absorbed in Star Wars. This is just admission, you know. It's confession. Dear Lord, forgive me. So, but I'm neither of those. I'm always changing. I'm dynamic. So, our problem is, and every religious society's problem is, they have a lot of really funny words for people that are static designations based on scriptures. For example, someone's an infidel. You know what infidel is? Kafir, infidel. That's not in our religion. We have other words. So we're going to talk about our words right now. And there's our flip chart lady. We hired her for the occasion. So you got a pen? You got a pen? So we want to find out some of the words that we use in Krishna consciousness that disconnect us from each other. Anyone have any ideas or should I start it out? What? Muta! That's a great one. I love that one. Yeah. Kanishta. Good. Got some Sanskrit here. You're just a Kanishta Adhikari. Like that sannyasi I was traveling with, he called me that all the time. In fact, it was so abusive. This is therapy for me, actually. It was so abusive. He would tell me that everybody else is not his body, but I am my body. It's horrible. He was telling me I was not fit to be a brahmachari. Okay, and later on he gave me sannyas. So, so anybody else have some interesting, what? Fallen. This is a fallen. Actually, we've done this before. We go through about 10 flip chart sheets. We're so expert. Anyone else? Yeah. A dog. What? Hog, dog, camel, and ass. That's a good one. Now, usually we don't use that on each other, but on someone else, you know. Karmi. Non-devotee, karmi, less intelligent. Rascal, what? What? Neophyte. Neophyte means they're new and they fight with each other. This is interesting, isn't it? Wow. We're having a lot of fun. Yeah. Hedonist. Low class. What? Malecha. We're expert. What? Muchi. You're a Muchi. Yeah. Sense gratifier. We're on a roll. Mayavadi. Impersonalist. Can you keep up? We want everyone to take notes. Take these words home with you and use them. Yeah. Maya, you're in Maya. Actually, we have a special one for ladies, Maya Davies. Mata G's. What's that? Materialistic. Okay, take that off. What's that? Illiterate? Okay. Dumb, idiot. What's that? False ego. Chandala. How about Shudra? Nobody got that one yet. Non-believer, atheist. Okay. I think we got enough insults right now. So why don't you flip that again? So now we're going to do the positive ones. But what we're going to show you is the positive ones disconnect you from the person too. They're just as disconnecting as the negative ones. Pure devotee. You're a pure devotee. You know, that's an interesting encounter with that particular one. One time I was giving someone an instruction, you know, it would be nice if you woke up early, went to Mangalarti, and they said, that's easy for you to say because you're a pure devotee. I said... All glories, you know, how do you put that in a glorious devotee, glorious devotee. What? Elevated. Transcendental, Paramahamsa. Humble, oh yeah, that's another one. You are humble. Yeah. What's that? Oh, there's a good one. You're an Uttama Adhikari. The servant leader. So. You're Mahabhagwat. What? Sincere? Sincere. Sadhu, Mahatma. What? Selfless. You are selfless. Isn't this exciting? You're renounced. Senior devotee, okay. But I'm not sure if that's positive or negative. It's like, it's called damning by faint praise, basically. Thank you. I'm going to take this home and read it to myself every day and feel better about myself. So the point we're making is that these designations, which some of them are shastric, some of them are not shastric, they're utilized with each other, and then we never really relate with each other. You know, once you give someone a label, let's say a negative label, like Prabhupada said something very funny one time. He said, give the dog a bad name and hang him. So then you can do, you see that contributes to violence. As soon as you give someone a name like that, contributes to violence. In any case, bad or positive or negative, that disconnects us in religious societies. And that's one of our big problems, not to be using the designations we have in Shastra on each other. To what time do we have for this first program today? 12:15. Okay, we'll keep on going. And so what we're going to teach is to basically focus on human needs, met or unmet, and learn how to share our feelings and needs and hear people with the heart rather than with judgment. So this empathic communication, just to summarize the introduction, can be used everywhere in temples, families, organizations. And in doing this, we can turn what we call monsters into real people. In other words, we don't see people in a negative way, and of course positive way too, and we shed our preconceived ideas about people. We are able to connect to people and develop deep, deep relationships. So does anyone have any questions at this particular point before we go on to the next portion? Yeah. You want to pass around the mic?
Marge, as we're doing this exercise, I was thinking about other ones that we use that perhaps are helpful, like we use the word guru, diksha guru, shiksha guru, teacher, mentor, counselor, yeah, in ISKCON. And I've seen that that also tends to put a label on someone and all kinds of, you know, we don't relate to them as a person because now they are the guru, for example. So isn't that also sort of blocks empathic communication at the same time it's needed? So could you comment on that?
It depends on how you're using those terms, what your consciousness is when you're using those terms. Now, definitely some sort of hierarchy is necessary. And in general, the hierarchy shouldn't be based so much on position, but rather someone's ability or how someone is able to help you, rather than looking at someone in terms of their designation. But natural hierarchies are definitely there. I mean, there are parents. I hate to tell you that. There are parents. And the children are, let's say, dependent on the parents in many ways. So that these natural hierarchies have to be respected. It doesn't have to be respected. But they will help one work within those natural hierarchies to develop empathy with each other. But rather than just seeing the parents, for example, as that hierarchical personality, they should see the parents as a person with their own needs and feelings. And that's how relationships can be developed. For example, if the parents, and this is a whole segment of empathic communication, if the parents want to have a close relationship with their children, they should see beyond the fact that the children are their children and see them as entities who have their own feelings and needs, and that children should see the parents as entities that have their own feelings and needs to develop a close relationship. But still, there it is a balance, to answer your question. There is a balance. You have to be aware of the natural hierarchies that don't have to, but it's a good idea to be aware of the natural hierarchies. Yes, you have a question back there. I can't hear you.
Sadhaka wants to have a relationships and wants to express some degree of friendship to the authorities also. But the images where the fingers arise, shown some authority, blocks it to express a friendship level of feelings in it.
And the question?
Yeah, how to overcome this?
How to overcome that? First of all, be aware of your own feelings and needs, and also be aware that in many circumstances, you're not going to get someone able to respond to you in a way that you would like them. You can't demand things of people. Let's say someone has a need for fun. Okay, let's not even use an authority right there. And I say to my friend, let's go out and play cricket today. How about that? So let's go out and play cricket. And he says, no, I have a need to rest today. I can't demand that he's going to do that. Or I can't demand that he's going to be my friend. That also destroys relationships. When someone, this is one of the blocks in communication we're going to learn about in this course. It's one of the four D's of discommunication. And one of them is demands. When we demand something of someone, we lose the relationship with someone. We can make requests. So you can't always, or practically any time, have the expectation that someone will fulfill your needs. You have to be responsible for fulfilling your own needs.
In that case, what was the point of having an authority to validate what we are doing even?
That's in a spiritual society. Let's not use the word authority, because for me that word has a lot of negative connotations to it. Because authority means someone who just like is your boss. Let's use the word a teacher, spiritual facilitator, a guru, whatever word you want to use. And that person facilitates your advancing in devotional service. If you're in a situation where your authority is demanding something of you,
yes,
then it's going to be very hard for you to do that activity from your heart, to do it in a voluntary devotional way. As Rupa Goswami says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in the nutshell verse, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnanakarman Navratam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Rutamam, that devotional service should be executed with a mood of devotion, joyfully, actively, and doing what the person has to do, asks you to do. So if it's something that's demanded of you, it's unlikely you're going to be doing that in a devotional way. It has to be a request. And this is an important part of empathic communication, learning how to make requests from people, not demanding things from people, and being responsible for fulfilling one's own needs. For example, if I have a need for food, which is one of the basic needs, and I ask someone to cook for me, and they say no, and I get angry with them, that means I'm demanding something from them. And that relationship is not a pleasant relationship. Everything in Krishna consciousness should be done on the basis of loving reciprocation, connection. That's what makes us happy. If it's done because I have to, because I'm being forced to, because it's my duty, as we mentioned before, then it becomes something that's rather unpleasant that we want to escape from, and eventually we may be resentful of doing that particular thing. All right? Any other questions before we go on? Yes. Mike.
Like a glorification, like when I do some little, tiny little service, I get some glorification from devotees.
That's nice.
So in that case, I know I'm not at all in that platform. So on one side, I kind of enjoy the glorification, but other side, I know that it's not me at all. So how do I handle? Because I feel very bad if sometimes glorifies me, someone glorifies me. But at the same time, I have some kind of, I enjoy to some extent, so I want to.
That's a good question. One of the basic needs we all have is something called appreciation. Appreciation means recognition of something we have done to, let's say, help someone or connect with someone or present Krishna consciousness, something we have done. Now, that is not the same thing as praise. There's a whole chapter in the book about appreciation. Actually, if any of you are interested in a copy of the book, I haven't read it yet, see Leela Shakti here, and we have some of my copies of the book about empathic communication. So praise is just a static designation again. Oh, you're so good. You're a good cook. But we need the feedback for what we're doing to feel encouraged. For example, let's say if you cooked nicely the other day, instead of me saying to you, you're a great cook, I would say, the pakora you made the other day, or with me it would be quinoa, so, because I don't take pakoras, I would say the quinoa soup you made the other day, without salt, without anything in it, was very tasty. Thank you very much. Now that's appreciation. But if I say, you're a fantastic cook, that's praise, and maybe it'll increase your false ego, but we need feedback like that. Just like after we finished with this seminar, I'd appreciate if devotees would write some feedback, you know, what I could have done better, how I contributed to their life or happiness or something like that. I appreciate that. It encourages me. Just like before this course started, two devotees wrote some appreciation for my book, and I got them. Aroma Padmara sent it to me, and I got it, and I said, wow, thank you. I feel really encouraged. I need the encouragement. And the interesting thing is that Roma Padmaraj wrote back to me, he said, I also need encouragement. You know, because sometimes people think, you know, oh, they're so elevated, you know, we're absorbed in Brahman, you know. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. I don't hanker or lament, Om, Shanti, Shanti. But we're human. We're souls and human bodies too. So we have needs. We have needs for rest, recreation, all those things. And one of the needs I have is a need for appreciation. You know, how I contributed to help someone. It really makes me feel good, and it doesn't make me feel big and proud and puffed up. It encourages me to do more of the same. That's all. We need encouragement. It's not false ego. Okay, thank you for the question. Yes, another question. A microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So if we need appreciation, we know that we can demand it. So how do we ask our...
We can fish for it. You know, People do that. How did I do? How did I do? Did you like what I said? Did you like that joke? Yeah, why not? That's, of course, sneaky fishy for appreciation. Anyway, yeah, we should ask. Give me some feedback. Give me some feedback. Because we're generally thinking that a so-called advanced devotee, there's another designation, doesn't need anything. But it's not true. An advanced devotee, no matter how advanced, because I can't speak from that platform because I'm not advanced, but no matter how advanced, they have a need for love and play, recreation, for fun. I mean, look how oftentimes Prabhupada was joking. You know, like, for example, Prabhupada was in an airplane one time, and it was called, the airline was called Pacific Standard Airlines. And the stewardesses in those airlines wore skirts up to about here. And Prabhupada said, you should call it Prostitute Standard Airlines. Or not. I mean, Prabhupada had a need for humor, too. I mean, he was a person. And sometimes he would call for little Saraswati, who was Malati's daughter, and, you know, just call for her to come from some other place in the world, and Prabhupada would play with the little girl, you know. You know, that is, so everybody's a human, you know, in this world we're human beings, we're persons. In the spiritual world, they're persons. They're not just like robots that serve Krishna. Yeah, you think like that, okay, Krishna wants this, Krishna wants that. You know, sometimes they're arguing with each other, playing with each other. One, you know, you hear the story about the coward boys. One boy takes another boy's lunch and passes it to a third. It's called Monkey in the Middle. Anyone's ever played that? They do that in the spiritual world. So all these basic needs, of course, they don't need air and stuff like that in the spiritual world. But these need, excuse me, the need for connection, for fun, interconnectedness, all these things are there in the spiritual world. Of course, with Krishna, yes.
So, Prabhu, I have a question related to if need creates a disappointment. So if you need appreciation, if someone is not providing appreciation, you'll get disappointed. So whatever you are doing, if you are attached with any kind of fruits, then that creates a disappointment.
If you need appreciation from a particular individual, you'll be disappointed. But we, in order to be stable, to progress in devotional service, it's important to recognize these basic human needs and try to make some strategy for it. Like you say, if you need air and you try to get air, you'll be disappointed. If you need food and you try to get food, you'll be disappointed. These are all basic human needs so that we can be stable. Just like Prabhupada gave the example in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam about Gajendra the elephant. Some of you may be familiar with this story. Gajendra the elephant encountered this crocodile in the water. Everybody knows this story? He went into the water, the crocodile just grabbed his leg, and he wasn't able to defeat the crocodile until he prayed to Lord Vishnu, because he happened to be an incarnation of Indradunya, and Lord Vishnu came and saved him. And Prabhupada gave the example that, or gave the message from that particular story, that one needs to identify his needs in terms of his ashram. To make some, Prabhupada said, if one cannot fight Maya, Prabhupada used the example. It's not that we literally want to fight Maya, because she'll beat us. But one should be ready to engage in the fight for Krishna consciousness from the proper situation to fulfill their basic needs. I'm paraphrasing what Srila Prabhupada said. So if we want to be stable, you know, I understand if you're a pure devotee, then whatever, then you can just go on without food, nijahara, vihara. Did you tell about the six Goswamis? They gave up eating, they gave up sleeping. And they were simply running around, hey Radhe, Braja Devake, hey Nanda, Shunokuta, Radharani, Krishna, where are you? Forget about the food. Of course they didn't say that. Then, I'm not on that level. Maybe you are. But I'm not on that level, so let's just admit who we are. I mean, it's being vulnerable. I mean, how many of us admit to some other devotee in confidence that they're struggling in a particular way with something? You know, like we have the Dadati Pratigranati Guyamakyati Prichati Bhunte Bhojate Chai, but that's from the Nectar of Instruction. One of the principles in advancing in devotional service, most important principles, is to have loving exchanges with the devotees, and one aspect of those loving exchanges is to reveal the mind in confidence, be vulnerable, that I'm struggling. Can you help me? I have this desire, this feeling, this need, whatever. And so it's important to be aware of your needs. And, you know, you can develop different strategies. Let's say if you're a brahmachari, you have a need for love and you're not getting it met by the other brahmacharis in the ashram. Not that you're kissing them or anything. But then what do you do? Maybe you get yourself a pet. A brahmachari with a pet. So, you know, you find out some strategy. The point I'm making, obviously you don't have brahmacharis with pets in the ashram. Maybe you do. So you do something to fulfill a need that you may have to think outside the box to fulfill your need. But there is a way to do it if you're Krishna conscious, to think outside the box, because the important thing is to be stable so that every day you're able to choose to execute your bhakti and progress in devotional service. And be stable. You know, if it means someone is a householder, someone's a brahmachari, someone's a sannyasi, whatever situation you have to arrange for so you can do your bhakti every day and progress. But somehow or other, be aware of those needs. Then you'll be slow and steady wins the race. You know, like the tortoise and the hare. You know that story. Everybody knows that story. So one other question. Yes. Has to be some follow-up? No. Doesn't have to be follow-up. Empathy means connection. Means that I am trying to empathy with someone else. There's two types of empathy. There's empathy for yourself, which empathy begins at home, as it said, that I am feeling a certain way. This is the part of the process which we're going to go into. Because I have a particular need. Let me figure out some strategy to fulfill that need. And empathy for others means to try to guess, you know, are you unhappy because you have a need for food? And I may be wrong in guessing. The interesting thing about guessing about someone else's need, and you don't have to use that language either. I mean, if you're one of the main criticisms of people who study nonviolent communication is they're always using the same language. Are you unhappy because you have the need? Are you crying because you have this need? Are you this because you have that need? I said, oh my God, get away from me. But empathy can be expressed without words. In fact, that's very powerful because words are only like 7 or 9% of communication. Most communication is nonverbal. Nonverbal means the tone of voice, your body language. That's why internet and email is horrible for resolving conflicts. Anyone's tried to resolve a conflict or have a conflict on email here? Raise your hand. Everybody. I got two hands. And what happens? It gets worse. Because the person doesn't really hear what you mean, what you're saying. You know, he hears the words. So most empathy is exhibited by tone of voice and body language. Like, you know, let's say I'm sorry about using you again. But let's say I'm talking to you, and I just like, are you feeling unhappy because you need some food? You know, it doesn't go anywhere. But instead, you know, I can see him hungry and just look at him and just say, and try to understand. You know, it's really most of it's nonverbal. And the interesting thing of it, a lot of it's psychic. I mean, that sounds like really far out, you know, science fiction type of stuff like that. But I've seen conflicts resolved. Let's say there's a husband and wife who has a conflict. And one of the things we do to resolve the conflict is the wife will be, let's say, 1,000 miles away. Not that she's sent 1,000 miles away, which is not necessarily a bad idea. But the wife will be 1,000 miles away, let's say, for example, and the husband will be there, and I'll play the wife's part without putting a sorry on. I'll play the wife's part and reflect what the husband is saying empathically and, you know, give the husband some hints on how to do empathic listening too. And the wife 1,000 miles away will actually just call up on the phone and say, you know, wow, I feel connected or whatever. Isn't that Rajalila? You've seen that happen? So that, it's really powerful stuff. When you empathize with people, you really care. It's care. Care and also being vulnerable, not really caring what someone may think of you or what judgment someone may be making of you. Be willing to say what you're feeling and needing. So that's the beginning. So I think we have to take a break now. How long is the break for? 15 minutes. You got a break. Okay, thank you. What? What? 15. 1-5, not 5-0. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.